Grab your favorite caffeinated beverage and get cozy because you are listening to Mindful as a Mother with Paige Bruce and Lindsay Adams. This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for therapy or the therapeutic relationship, and the information given in this podcast is purely for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the advice of a professional.
Do you remember those toys from when we were kids where you would fit the different shaped pegs into the different shaped holes?
Yeah.
That's a lot like parenting, except when you have a neurodivergent child, using traditional parenting techniques is like trying to put the round peg in the star hole.
That's exactly how I felt when I discovered that Sam was neurodivergent. I knew that traditional parenting techniques and even the approaches that I was taught in grad school, they didn't feel right in my soul to like supporting who he was as a human. And they also just weren't effective. And that's when I discovered the power of responsive parenting.
Exactly. So if you are like us and are interested in tailoring responsive parenting techniques to your neurodivergent world, check out our Parenting Your NeuroSpicy video series. You can find it in our Sandstore at the link in the show notes.
It is so hard to find social and emotional learning toys that will actually be engaging and fun for your child. And that's why we are so excited that we are partnering with Slumberkins.
In our home, we're really struggling right now with the idea that I'm the worst kid ever. I'm a horrible sister anytime we make a mistake. And so we recently brought in the Yak, which is all about self-acceptance for kids. And it's made such a difference. When we're struggling, we can remember that our brain is lying to us and say Yak's affirmation, I am loved as I am. When things get tough, I go back to my heart. I know I am enough.
Oh, I love this. It's hard for me to find toys that are or stuffies that are engaging for my kids. And normally I take them to my office, but with the Slumberkins, I haven't even been able to get them to my office because my kids are so obsessed. So if you want to try Slumberkins, you can go to their website. We'll also put it in the show notes and use the code MindfulAsAMother for 15% off at checkout. Hello and welcome back to Mindful as a Mother. My name is Lindsay Adams and I'm here with
Paige.
And today we are talking about the emotional ladder for your children. So if you didn't listen to the previous episode, please go back and listen to it because you need to understand the ladder and how it affects you and shows up for you so that you can hold space and support your children in moving through their emotional ladder.
I did not, until I read this book, just fun fact, I did not realize the steps of a ladder were called rungs.
You didn't?
No. Like, why didn't I think about that?
I did know that, but I don't know like where I learned or picked up that level of information. Okay. There's another podcast I listen to. It's called The Bad Broadcast. It's like super popular. Do you listen to that?
Uh-uh.
So she talks about like, it's just like life things people submit, like their worst ex stories or their worst in-law stories. And it's, she kind of comments on it and shares, and it's funny. But she has this segment, and she called it the Dum Dum Club. And it's like things that you realize like that like, wait, oh, how did I get through my whole life? And so I have a few of those that I'm like, oh, yep, I am definitely in the Dum Dum Club. So that's what I thought of is, and it's a nice, cute way, not like you're a Dum Dum, but like, I think like a Dum Dum sucker, like you're, oh, yeah. It's so cute. Aww, that you didn't know that. Yeah, yeah. And I have a ton of those because that's my life. I called it, I'll share one of mine. You know, Netflix, mm-hmm. Or like Spotify, you add it to the queue. I called it the K because of Spanish, because it's like Q. So I call it the K. And Tim's like, what the hell are you talking about? I was like, the K. And he's like, it's the Q.
It's the Q.
And I was like, that makes so much more sense.
Let's just circle back to the GIF situation.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's a GIF or a GIF.
I'm going to go with it.
I think that was open to interpretation.
I think so. Because that's what I personally believe, and that must be right.
So what are the different rungs on the emotional ladder?
One, present and calm.
And we're going from the top down, guys, just as a quick refresher.
Two, I believe, is awareness.
Yeah.
Three, autopilot. Four, survival. Five, delusional.
Yes. And so in last week's episode, we talked about how you can recognize that you're in different states and how you can move in different states. Now we're going to talk about about how we can recognize our children are in these states, because children express things through their behaviors. That's how we know what kind of state they're in, because they often don't have the awareness to say like, oh, I'm feeling this way, or oh, I'm in survival, right? It's a behavioral thing.
Yeah.
So behaviorally, what does a one look like in kids of different ages?
So let's go with teens and preteens. A one would be feeling calm. We're not experiencing anxiety regarding school and homework and peers. Mm-hmm. We are supporting and enjoying our relationships in our life, whether that's with family members or with peers. Mm-hmm. We're getting enough sleep and rest in. We're not moody. Mm-hmm. And we're cooperative and collaborative with our family members.
Yes. And so this is where I think of like the times where you tell your teen like, hey, you need to clean your room before you go out with their friends. And they're like, yeah, okay, cool. And they just go do it. Like that is or you say your curfew's 10 and they're like, cool. And they don't argue. There's not pushback. Like they're flexible and adaptable and easy to work with. They're collaborative.
Yes. And they are successfully able to manage their ADHD symptoms with whatever accommodations or skills or tasks or things that we've already been working through and talking about and covering.
Yes.
And teaching them within our families.
Yeah. So there's a level of awareness of, and this goes into two as well, but like what skills they're using those skills as at a teenage level. If they've built the foundation, then it looks like maybe more independently using skills and not needing as much prompting or feedback from you as a parent about where they are at.
Yeah. And I think independent use of skills. So now here's my question. How many level one teens do you know?
Not very many.
Hormones play a role in that too, but it just made me laugh.
And then for younger, like preteen, it's similar to teens, but maybe they need a little more support with like implementing skills or being aware of what's going on in the moment. For younger kids, this looks like playing well with others, less fighting with siblings, more cooperative, more willing to share, more willing to like accept feedback.
Less self-critical,
less emotionally reactive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Their needs are consistently being met.
Yeah.
Yeah. Food.
And they can express safety. Their needs.
Yeah, I think they can express their needs. Yeah.
So when we move to two, that is the awareness piece. Let's start with teens. In teens, I think that looks like there's some struggles coming up, but they're aware of them. They have a plan to deal with them. So it might be like, hey, I have a few missing assignments. This is my plan. Or they're open to feedback from a parent. So you approach them as a parent, say, hey, I noticed you have a few missing assignments. What's your plan? And they may say, I don't know. I need help with that. Or you can suggest a plan and they're open to trying it.
They're open to problem solving and feedback.
Mm-hmm. And then for younger kids, it's the same, but maybe a little more like dependent on you pointing out that they may be in this state.
Yeah, building the awareness.
Yeah. And younger kids, this looks like there may be conflict or things that come up, but when you intervene, it's easy to manage. So there's a sibling fight and you intervene and everybody's cooperative with intervening, right? Like that's what being a two looks like. So the symptoms and the issues and the behaviors are a little more intense, but they're easily managed. And this is when you can go to your child and say, hey, I think we need to use a skill right now. Mm-hmm. And they are like, yeah, sure, let's breathe together.
Or they're open to it.
This is not the phase where they're like, I refuse to take deep breaths, right? Or I refuse to take, we call it calm down time in our house or alone time, depending on like, because sometimes my kids just ask for alone time when they need it. And that's mm-hmm. that building of awareness. But sometimes I'll say, hey, do you feel like you need calm down time to Sam, or do you need alone time? And sometimes if he's in two, he'll be like, you know, yeah, actually I do. And he'll go in his room and do it on his own. And then if he's in like 3, 4, or 5, he's like, nah.
Yes. So one is in my life, one is when my 8-year-old is like, I need space, and goes, right? Expressed it. And then the autonomy taken. Yeah. Two is like, when I'm seeing it happen, I'm like, I wonder if we need some space. Not that I'm telling her to, right?
Yeah, but it's a curiosity piece. Yeah,
I'm going to do that. and then goes.
Yeah. And so it's this like workable approach, and this can be navigated through like all ages. For more of a toddler or younger child, this looks like being more agreeable to being comforted or calming down, right? Like, so this is, hey, why don't you come sit with me on the couch and we snuggle or read a book? And they're like, yeah, sure. I'm just trying to think for a toddler, like what a good example would be. I think that's the best one I could come up with.
In the two?
Yeah.
Yeah, because as a toddler, you're focusing on building their self-awareness by pointing it out and like
supporting them.
Yeah, you're narrating it and giving them, like prompting them.
And well, the other thing is like they respond really well to redirection. So yes. Say maybe they hit or have like a normal toddler like behavior and you offer a correction, like our hands are only used for, you know, high fives or, you know, whatever, that then they like respond well to that redirection. Or maybe they're having trouble sharing and it's the other person's turn. You say, we're going to let your sister finish her turn. And when she's done, then you can take a turn. What do you want to do while we wait? And they're like, oh, I want to play with this. Like they respond really well to redirection.
Yes, I agree with that. Or so it's, I have a 4-year-old, so she's still a toddler. She's at a 2 when I'm saying, it's so-and-so's turn with it now. And when they're done, then we can take the turn, right? Because we were fighting over it. And she goes, ah, okay. And then walks away.
Yeah. What Sam will do in that, how I know he's in it too, is like, fine. Because like, it's, I'm annoyed by this, but I'm still able to like walk away, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and accept that this is the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
3 is autopilot. And what does that look like in teenagers?
Autopilot is putting out little fires as they show up, just existing, not necessarily taking a proactive approach. So I would say maybe we're spending more time procrastinating, but we're still getting stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're not consistent in our like things at home that we're asked to do, and there's a little more pushback, but eventually we do them. Let's say,
I think overwhelm and stress are like a big indicator. Like if your teen is saying that they're stressed out about their responsibilities, yes, or they have their
peer relationships. Yeah,
that's where you can see like they're expressing, they're still able to be aware of like what's a little bit of what's happening, but not really aware of the part they play in it. They're aware that like, this is uncomfortable for me.
Yes.
But
I'm maybe even placing a little bit of blame on like external factors.
Yeah. And so, and when you hear your kids start to complain that you're a mean parent or you're asking too much of them or it's unrealistic, that's when they're in this phase.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
What about younger teens, preteens?
Preteens, I would say, well, I work with a lot of kids who start expressing some anxiety and stress in their preteens.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe difficulty with their peer relationships, so they're not enjoying their social, like their extracurricular activities or school as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Pressures,
pressure. Like, I feel like mm-hmm. there's pressure.
Yeah, pressure. Yeah. Even maybe some more isolating than normal.
Mm-hmm.
Or like withdrawal from typical relationships.
Yeah. Or the thing I feel like I see in this phase and the next phase with kids like that are more focused on peer relationships. So this is like your preteen and teenagers. Yeah,
preteens and teens. It's all preteens and teens.
They either isolate from their friendships or they go all in on their friendships and screw their responsibilities, yeah. Right? Like there's not that healthy balance there. Yeah.
And the difficulty balancing an autopilot.
Yeah. Because it's like, I'm just going to do what is like feels most important in the moment. And a lot of teens avoid that emotional, like, especially neurodivergent teens, when something becomes overwhelming, there's an avoidance pattern to it. So like, I'm just going to do the fun thing.
Which we've talked about being the yellow, red, blue, yellow, red.
Yeah. Go listen to our quadrant.
Yeah. The quadrants.
Quadrants. Okay, and then younger kids, for me, this looks like getting in multiple sibling conflicts, like back-to-back. If it feels like all day there's a problem or having emotional reactions, like more emotional than usual. So maybe it's not manageable, like I can help calm them down, but it feels like with co-regulation, but I am spending a lot of time doing
that. Yeah, like I'm having to co-regulate a lot and manage sibling fights a lot in my house. or even friendships, like friendship fights a lot, more emotionality. Mm-hmm. So we're a little more sensitive. This is when in my house, it's the stop copying me. Don't look at me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there isn't necessarily something physical happening, but we are out of three.
And we're scanning for danger, right? Yeah. So like if our sibling looks at us wrong,
that's it.
Yeah. Lots of, I don't really like this word, but I don't know what else to call it, like tattling.
Yeah.
And this, like, a lot of, like, this, the word. Mm-hmm. Like, I need you to do something about this thing.
Keep me safe. Keep me safe.
Yeah.
Keep me safe.
Yeah.
Attachment person.
And it's not really about what the other person is doing or the tattling behavior. It's a way of your child communicating to you that, like, hey, I am in a three right now. And then that's where you can say, like, as a parent, instead of addressing the tattling behavior, you can address, like, the need for safety and regulation, and then the tattling stops. You don't even have to really address it, right? Like,
yeah. So you just validate. And if your kid doesn't have siblings, like in a parental relationship, it's the same thing. You're getting a lot of pushback. You're getting a lot of, like, you're a mean parent, or they don't want to spend time with you, or maybe they want to spend a lot of time with you, like never leave you.
Yeah. So it's that, like, I'm very, like, attached and anxious when I'm not with you.
Yeah.
Versus, like,
yeah. Well, and for some kids, it's like, I don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah. So a lot of kids have this, especially neurodivergent kids, is it's like, I don't want you to comfort me. I just want to go in my room. Yeah.
Do my thing. The other day, Alayla was in a three. She's my 8-year-old, and I knew because she called me mother.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
That was the first time. She's like, fine, mother. I was like, excellent.
At least she didn't first meet you yet.
Not yet.
So for toddlers, a three looks like just like having emotional difficulty and emotional intensity.
Maybe more separation anxiety. Uh-huh. I would say, especially if there's changes or transitions in your life. So like separation anxiety, whether you take them to daycare or like maybe you need to leave and go do something. They're a little more emotional about it.
And also this is where they don't respond as well to redirection. So it's like they hit or throw something, you offer like a redirection or a correction, and then they continue to do that despite being, you know, redirected and corrected.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's move on to survival.
Survival
is like frantic.
Yeah.
You're scanning for danger all the time.
Yeah.
Everyone else is dangerous to you.
Yes. This is the teen that's procrastinating the entire semester up until the very last minute. Now they're trying to rush and get everything in on time, so they're like short tempered.
Yeah, and if you interrupt them, then they're upset.
Yeah.
If you ask them to do their normal chore, they're upset.
If you ask them about their day, they're upset. Like, you can't do anything right.
Yeah.
As a parent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is when they're in survival. What other behaviors come up in like preteens and teens that aren't school related? I think it's just a lot of conflict. Like, it's being really moody,
a lot of conflict.
Picking on siblings, I see a lot. And, like, it's when they're likely they'll go and, like, pick fights with their siblings. Or they'll be more annoyed by younger siblings. So, say you have a teen that's the oldest. Like, and they have, like, an 8-year-old sibling. They're, like, they're the most annoying person in the entire world. Yeah. When normally they can handle 8-year-old behaviors, right?
I would say a lot more mood swings. And this is male and female.
Yeah.
A lot more mood swings because we're emotionally reactive. We already have difficulty with emotional regulation, but we're much more emotionally
reactive. And then you add, like, so to me, this is like the trifecta of hell for these kids and for their parents, right? It's like they're a teenager. So we've got brain development. Teenagers and toddler brains look very similar on brain scans.
Yep.
For people who didn't know. And it's that upper part of your brain responsible for that, like, emotional piece. Paige is smelling her armpit right now, guys. Did it stink? I need to know now.
No, it doesn't, but I'm starting to sweat and I forgot to put on deodorant.
Okay. Well, sorry. We can edit this out if you want.
So, teens and toddler brains are very similar on brain scans because...
Oh, because their the upper part of their brain is undergoing construction, right?
Yeah.
And that to become more of like an adult brain. And so a lot of people talk about hormones and that is accurate, but there's also this brain development piece and why it's like... My child from like 10 to 13 could manage their emotions better than my 14 to 17 year old child.
Yep.
And it's like, that's why, that's what's going on, that and the hormones. And then you add, if a child's neurodivergent,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like the trifecta of hell, right? Like, it is,
yeah,
just...
Yeah, because we already have difficulties.
Yeah, so it's like being a teenager, having normal teenage stuff, and then being neurodivergent.
And this is where there comes a lot of black and white thinking. So it's this or this. Your teen is not problem solving. They're not collaborative in problem solving. They're not accessing or using skills. It is this or this. And there is a clear one that will kill them and a clear one that they need to do.
And I think there's also like a lot of apathy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not possible. It is not possible.
Yeah, for it feels me. Too hard.
Your expectations are too much. And I think that often becomes going into 4 and 5, because there's some crossover, I think, of it like being externalized. So it's like my teacher's fault. They don't get the grades in on time.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They don't, they assign these assignments that don't matter. They blah, blah, blah. It's too hard. Or it's your fault because you are expecting too much of them. Mm-hmm. Or you are being unreasonable as a parent. And so when you start to hear those things, you know that your teen is in a 4.
Yeah, 4, maybe almost a 5. Yeah.
Moving down to like your younger ages, this is, for me, it's like a constant power struggle, it feels like, of maybe like more lower yes. intensity. It's manageable, but there's not a break in it. So it's like I go from like one power struggle, one conflict.
Everything feels like a fight.
One emotional reaction to the next.
Yeah. And I feel exhausted having to remind them multiple times and follow up multiple times. And just feels like this is where I think people get into the bargaining and negotiation with the younger kids.
Yes. Yes. The like, but I'll do this if you do this, or can you do blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. The other piece I think it to be aware of when we're talking about this is the lower your child gets in the emotional ladder, the more support they're going to need for tasks that they previously didn't maybe need support for. So if you're asking your 7-year-old to clean their room and you know they're at a 4, that may require you stepping back and like sitting in the room or helping them clean the room mm-hmm. at a 4 versus when they're at a 1, they maybe can do it independently.
Yeah.
And so, and it's okay to do that. And just being aware of that can really help in supporting your child through these emotional phases.
Mm-hmm.
Younger kids, like toddlers, this looks like a lot of pushback, a mm-hmm. lot of conflict, not being easily comforted.
Yeah, not easily comforted. I would say a lot of different emotions. So like we're quickly angry and then we're really sad. And like, cause you know, they're having huge tantrums and then they're having huge, like crying and sobbing mm-hmm. up and down, up and down.
The other thing that I think it's important to think about is where overstimulation plays into this like ladder
mm-hmm.
and you're more easily overstimulated at like a 3, 4, 5 than mm-hmm. you are at a 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And kids are the same way. So like, knowing that your child's at a 4, any extra like, so maybe your child can handle going to the grocery store as a toddler when they're at a 1 or 2 or like a young child. Mm-hmm. But if they're at like a 4, the grocery store may be completely overstimulating and be a behavioral nightmare.
Yeah. And I feel like this is especially true for neurodivergent children in the like infant toddler years. And it's something that as parents I hear about a lot, because it's like, oh, I had a highly sensitive toddler that made it difficult to navigate when I could go out, if I could go on road trips, like how we needed to like sleeping accommodations. Like these are all very real things that are going to make more of an impact at a younger age mm-hmm. and that are going to lead them to more 3, 4, 5s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's knowing like, so sometimes I forego family events because it's going to be, so here's an example. We went to Washington to watch our niece graduate high school. My 4-year-old is neurodivergent. And so she was already at, I would say, a 3 leaning towards a 4 at the end of our night. It was our first day there. We stayed up late the night before, so we already had less sleep. She played all day, didn't nap, so she was stimulated all day. And then her graduation wasn't until 8 p.m. at night, which would be 9 p.m. my normal time with her. So I opted to stay home with her and get her in bed at a good time rather than go to the actual graduation with the rest of the family. because that's just what she needed. Mm-hmm. That's where she was at in her ladder. So if I had forced her to go, I knew we would have moved into a 4 or 5 and it would have been miserable for all of us, including her. But then once everyone left, and she was really upset at first about not going, but then everybody left and she laid on top of the stairs and just cried. She started crying and she said, "Mom, I'm so tired." Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, we made the right choice. So then she was able to just like relax. We slowed way down. We had a snack. We got to bed at a good time. And then she was at a 2 the next day.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how when you can be, especially when traveling with these kiddos, like if you can be in tune and adaptable to where they are showing up in the moment, then you can really navigate, like, maybe they're at a 4, but they don't have to get to a 5, or the whole vacation doesn't have to be stressful. Like, we can mm-hmm. take steps to get back to a 2 or 1 the next day.
Yeah, it's like I couldn't do anything about the actual traveling leading us to a 4 or a 5, right? Because mm-hmm. there was a lot of high demands and unexpected things that happened.
Yeah.
But then once we got there, I could incorporate other things that helped us move back up the ladder.
Mm-hmm. The thing, this is where, like, to help my kids move up the ladder, because there is, like, Sam does have a PDA piece to him. It's not as intense as some cases I've read, but like the more emotionally intense he gets, the more the PDA comes out, because it's like an autonomy thing, right? Mm-hmm. So the more autonomy I can give him and the more I can lessen the demand of just life for him, the more quickly I can get him back to like a 2 or 1.
Mm-hmm.
What does a 5 look like?
Okay, so I'm going to start with victim mentality, and this happens in teens and preteens. This is very
they
much
they naturally
so.
Kind of have it a victim just, mentality, yeah, like too.
Already, yeah, yeah. It's like, this teacher hates me. They didn't also, do this. They're not doing this. My parents hate me. They never see anything good that I do.
It is my favorite age to work with. Middle school is my favorite age to work with.
Middle school.
And I think it's because that was my hardest age in life. And so there's probably like an unconscious, like, I want to support kids through that. But yeah, that's when it starts, is like the... I'm the victim. You also see, like, when you're problem solving, they think nothing's going to work.
Yeah.
Nothing will work. That won't work for me. That won't work for me. That won't work for me.
That won't work. That won't work. I've even had teens where I verbalize, so even when you're in the perfect environment that you've described, you still don't complete your homework. And
yeah.
Like, yeah. And I'm like, so you still don't take responsibility for completing your homework? And they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not their fault still.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, there's no accountability.
Like, no.
And there's no insight. This is the thing where, like, normally, like, if you have a teen where you've seen insight in the past, and then there's no insight.
Yeah.
That's where
you're
like.
And then it's like, okay. What's happening?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There, it's an emotional piece. The other thing is, like, really severe isolation at this point.
I was going to say, like, not to label, but. Depression, severe anxiety. I have teens with panic disorder at this level 5, right?
Yeah, well, or I'll have parents write me that. They're like, how do I, like, better my connection with my teen? They spend all day in their room playing video games. They refuse to participate in family activities. They are, like, they'll answer yes or no to my questions, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is where you see this piece. And it's harder, I think, to get a teen out of a level 5 because we have less sway once they're teenagers. And it's more on them in some ways. And that can be really difficult as a parent.
Yeah. It feels like you have a loss of autonomy.
Yeah. And this is where I think professional help is super important, because unfortunately, teens listen to anyone who isn't their parent.
Yep. And you can say the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Okay. Preteens.
Similar, but more... Yeah. I mean, I think it's very similar, but also they have less autonomy naturally. So this is maybe more... refusing, like, to meet responsibilities and like chores, lots of power struggles with, like, demands and rules.
Maybe
and
pushes for more autonomy than would be age appropriate.
Yeah.
A lot more defiance. I would say this one and the, like, let's drop a little bit lower too into children. Low self-esteem.
Yeah.
I would say I see a lot of, like, low self-esteem, very, like, critical inner voice.
Mm-hmm.
We're really interpreting the interactions with our peers, the comments of our peers, in a negative way.
Yeah, and so this can present, I think, in two ways. There's like the avoidance of like, I'm gonna isolate and avoid because of emotional reasons, or I'm on the attack and I'm having a ton of conflict. So I usually see teens go two ways. Like, they refuse to socialize when they're in this, or they don't think they can make friends. They misinterpret everything, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like a sad, isolated, turned inward towards themselves thing.
Yeah, I'm even talking children like above toddler, before preteen.
Yeah. And then there's the, I'm going to have conflict with everybody.
Everybody. Yep. So it's so funny. It just depends on how you're wired, which one will show up.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And it's, well, it's the like, extremes of behaviors. At level five, it's the extremes of behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, for younger, it's the same thing. Like, a ton of conflict, constantly being emotionally heightened. Yeah. Not able to calm down, not able to complete responsibilities that they've been able to complete in the past.
Maybe even high expectations for themselves. That version of such high expectations on themselves that they won't reach it, but then we're self-critical, mm-hmm. and it like starts to perpetuate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like general like apathy, like nothing's gonna help. I'm always gonna be like this. My life sucks.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you hear. Toddlers, to me, this is like full-blown meltdown.
Yeah, all the time, anywhere you go, full-blown meltdowns, whether that's in anger or whether that's in tears.
Yeah.
Difficulty relating with their peers, other toddlers their age, because nobody's regulated in this scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what can people do to help move their children from a five if they're open to it?
My first thought is intentionally slowing down.
Yeah.
It's like we need to intentionally slow down, because when we're at a five, that's our body is telling us, like, this is a vital sign. Our body is telling us that something is not working for us. And so it's almost like strip off all the parts and start again at the baseline.
And this is where it's like lower demands, lower expectations, yes. Meet them where they are.
Cancel all of your extracurricular activities, cancel all your play dates.
And it doesn't mean, I mean, because we've talked about like this can be like you can be in this for a long time, you can be in it for a short time. So maybe you do just need a day.
Yeah.
Maybe you need a week. Maybe you need to rethink your teen's schedule. And it doesn't mean they can't get back to the regular one, but it's like lowering demands gives them the space to do that.
Yes. All right. Well, this was our explanation of the ladders of emotional well-being, including for our neurospicy children. Go back and listen to the one for adults, listen to this one for kids, and then let us know what you think.
Thanks for coming to Mindful as a Mother podcast. If you'd like more of us and Mindful as a Mother, you can find Paige at Instagram at Parenting with Paige, and Lindsay at Linz_AdamsLCSW. Find us on TikTok, Instagram, and in our Facebook group, Creating Community and Smashing Parental Stigma, Embracing Mindful Motherhood and Positive Parenting. Thanks so much, and see you next time.